Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here today to talk to this group. So I'd like to figure out how this works. I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to start out, this is not going to be a medical talk. It's a general school health talk, but need a little bit of medical background. So I'd like to start out with defining sudden cardiac arrest and comparing that to sudden cardiac death. So sudden cardiac arrest is a condition in which the heart stops suddenly and unexpectedly. It's the immediate loss of electrical function. This is caused by ventricular fibrillation, which is an abnormality in the heart's electrical system, causes the heart to quiver and the blood flow of the body and the brain to stop. It's shown by this chaotic appearing electrocardiogram. And as opposed to sudden cardiac death, this occurs if emergency treatment with cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, or an automated external defibrillator, an AED, is not used immediately, or a spontaneous recovery, which is rare, does not occur. There is no reporting system for sudden cardiac death in children. We hope the CDC may get involved in this soon. But at the present time, we are left with a number of various reports that show an incidence of 3 to 6 per 100,000 person years. Now, the one that's very low, the 0.6 was, I had 95% of the data obtained from Yahoo and Google and LexisNexis, and so I think the 3 to 6 is probably the best range. That's about 1,000 deaths per year in the United States, and it's greatest in the 10 to 19-year age group, the middle and high school age child, with a ratio of 4 to 1, a male to female, and two-thirds of these deaths occurring with exercise or activity. This chart from the CDC mortality rates for 5 to 17-year-olds show that this is indeed a significant public health problem. You see here that it's comparable to the deaths from suicide and homicide in these age groups, secondary only to accidental deaths, and higher than infectious disease, HIV, cancer, leukemia, meningitis, asthma, and birth defects. So I think this is something that we really don't recognize as to the significance of this problem in children. Now, again, the particular names here don't matter, but it's important to understand that the etiology of sudden cardiac death in children, and this is what's responsible for most sudden deaths in children, revolves around an abnormality of the heart muscle, an abnormality of the electrical system of the heart, an abnormality of the heart function or structure, and a few other conditions that I'll go through. So basically, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a thickness of the heart muscle, this is what causes most of the field deaths, the baseball and football field deaths, responsible for almost half of these deaths. Electrical abnormalities, and most of these are genetically transmitted, responsible for another almost 20%. Structural heart disease, either an abnormal placement of a coronary artery, which causes a lack of blood supply to the heart and results in ventricular fibrillation, or a structural abnormality of the heart, another 20%. Myocarditis is generally caused by a viral infection of the heart, and certain drugs, particularly cocaine and crack, which cause ischemia, coronary spasm, result in other deaths. And Marfan syndrome are the very tall individuals who end up having a rupture of their aorta. So most of you probably either had an electrocardiogram or know this, but an electrocardiogram shows the electrical activity of the heart, and this basically tells us about the heart health, the heart rhythm, and the heart structure. So we use a little computerized machine. We hook up a lot of leads that show this electrical activity from many different views, and we can diagnose undiagnosed cardiac conditions that are responsible for sudden cardiac death, those conditions I showed you, about two-thirds of the time. In Europe, screening for sudden cardiac death involves an electrocardiogram, but in the United States, we only use a history and physical exam, and there's quite a bit of controversy and no consensus as to the best screening model that we should be using. However, in Japan, in the schools, in the first, seventh, and tenth grade, since 1973, they've been using electrocardiographic screening. In Italy, in 1979, they passed a statute, the Medical called Protection of Athletes Act, and every year, every 12 to 35-year-old, whether they be a race car driver, a bike racer, a soccer, football player, they have to have a full sports evaluation that includes a cardiac evaluation and an electrocardiogram. So 12 European Union countries have adopted this, as has the International Olympic Committee and the International Federation for Football, or soccer as we call it. So what has this shown in Italy? Well, this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association over the 25 years between 1979 and 2004. The red line shows the incidence of sudden cardiac death, and that is a decrease compared to controlled population of non-athletes who are not screened there by 89% over 25 years. So that's a fairly compelling argument to use electrocardiographic screening. However, the American Heart Association that sets up the guidelines for this type of activity in the United States has suggested that we could use only a medical history that asks questions about chest pain, shortness of breath, exercise intolerance, fainting, have you ever had a family member who's died before 50 years of age, and a few physical findings to determine if these children are at risk. They do state that non-invasive testing can enhance the diagnostic power of the standard history and physical, and they don't recommend it, but they don't actively discourage community groups from doing this type of screening. So we decided to develop a study that would help us determine the best practice recommendation for a feasible electrocardiographic-based screening model that could be applied to a school-age population in the U.S. We felt that an effective method to identify those at risk would be a first step toward preventing these untimely deaths. So we looked at a number of models, including two Italian screening models, several IRB-approved screening models, a hospital or clinic-based model, and community screening models. We had several school heart health screenings, and we also visited Chicago, and I'll tell you more about the Young Hearts for Life screening, and we participated in a mass screening for school athletes in Philadelphia. All these screenings include a health questionnaire, an electrocardiogram, and some include an echocardiogram, that's an ultrasound, a picture of the structure of the and function of the heart, and a cardiac exam. This shows the first screening center that I visited in Rome. They focus on the elite Olympic and Paralympic athletes, and they do an echocardiogram. This is a machine that does an echo. This is a bicycle for exercise, and their exam room. This is Dr. Policio, who runs the center. These are very aerobic athletes, and so they do a very comprehensive exam. In the northern part of Italy that has published much of the Italian data, there are three centers. This is Dr. Maurizio Schiavone, who is the director of these centers. They screen about 7,000 a year with nine physicians, predominantly sports medicine and cardiology physicians. They do not have echo techs or ECG techs, so the doctors and the nurses run this with one administrative person for each of the three centers. They screen multiple systems. It's a full sports screening. They let the Italian Federation of Sport and the team know if the individual is eligible. If you're under 18, the National Health Service pays for this. If you're over 18, it's 40 euros. It's a fairly cost-effective way of doing this. So we decided to try to get some research data, put together a pilot heart health screening study to look at 400 school-aged children, and we recruited from the practices that send patients to the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the only stipulation was that these would be healthy children who were not known to have any type of heart disease. They would fill out a questionnaire that would include their medical history and the family history. They would come to the office. I did a physical exam. We did an electrocardiogram and an echo on each of these children, and this just shows our setup where they would come to our clinic, meet with our nurses, our ECG techs, get their echocardiogram, have their electrocardiogram read. And remarkably, we found that 10.75% of these healthy children had cardiovascular abnormalities. 5% of them had hypertension. This was a blood pressure taken at least three times over an hour. Another 5% had cardiovascular abnormalities, 10 of which fit into these sudden cardiac arrest associated conditions. There were about five that were electrical in nature. There were an additional three, four five that could be identified by the echo, but some of these identified by the electrocardiogram as well. This is an echocardiogram, the four chambers of the heart, and there's a hole between the two upper chambers. This was a little six-year-old girl who had not previously been picked up and who had open-heart surgery after this screening. So we published these data showing that the electrocardiogram could find 70% of these abnormalities. If the echo alone were used, although the electrocardiogram found some of these, that it would find 50%, and the history and physical would find or suggest only 20%, but both of these were also suggested by the electrocardiogram. Now, there are some negatives. The electrocardiogram has false positives, as any type of screening test does, about 6%, and we need to develop our normative data to be able to correct for that. By having an echocardiogram present at our screenings, we've been able to delay or do away with the anxiety of the family and allow them to know what's going on. So we concluded that children with conditions associated with sudden cardiac death could be identified with electrocardiographic screening, that while the echocardiogram added further sensitivity and specificity to the screening, it increased the cost, and this suggested that the electrocardiogram could be used for the initial screening with selected subjects having echocardiogram or other tests subsequently. The electrocardiographic standards that we currently use were derived 30 years ago from 2,000 white Canadian children. They are only stratified by age, and we feel that they need to be stratified by race, gender, age, and ethnicity as well, and we're working on that. We decided to move our screening into the school setting, and so my research nurse loads up the budget rental truck with all of our equipment, our electrocardiographic machines, and our echo machines, and our privacy screens, and we our weight and measurement scales, and we drive up to the schools and unload it, and we've screened about 2,300 children in this type of setting. Because it is a research study, we do schedule them so they have an appointment time to come in. We obtain permission, consent from the parent or the 18-year-old and assent from all of the children. They get their electrocardiogram. While I'm reading the electrocardiogram, they get their blood pressure and their height and weight measured. If there's some abnormality in either the history or the electrocardiogram, they get an echocardiogram. We tell the family the results right away, and then we follow up with their family physician for further evaluation as needed. And this just shows how this is done within the school setting. So of these 2,347 children, we found an additional 20 conditions, two atrial septal defects that required closure. These are conditions that result in sudden cardiac death, six long QT, and eight Wolff-Parkinson-White, and one individual with Marfan syndrome, three who have cardiomyopathies that we're following. So we're finding that about 1% now seems to be the number of individuals that we're going to be identifying by doing this type of screening. Now, that obviously doesn't mean that this 1% are going to die, but because these are mostly genetic conditions, when we identify one person, there's another eight or nine in the family who will be identified as we subsequently recommend the rest of the family be screened, and it may be that Aunt Jane or Uncle Charlie would be the one at risk or the sibling of this child. So there's a multiplier effect to doing this type of screening within the school as well. We did visit Dr. Merrick, shown here reading electrocardiograms in Chicago. His is not a research study, but he takes about 15 or 20 electrocardiographic machines into the school during the physical education class. The children come in and they go through their screening, and he screens about 1,000 to 1,500 a day. They do have an echo there if they feel that an abnormality has been identified. For about 3 years now, we've been participating in the Athlete Health Organization screening the 1,000 or 2,000 students from the Philadelphia school system. As in most states, there's an interscholastic athletic association that has to have the school form signed, and this is to provide this free of charge to these Philadelphia public school children. But we've been able to get an electrocardiographic evaluation done. We have echoes there if we need to do that, and every child gets a cardiac exam. So that's been an effective way to identify individuals as well. So in summary, our pilot screening and school studies have shown it is possible to screen within the school system a population of school-aged children using an electrocardiogram in addition to a history and physical. The best practice model that we would recommend is one that is most easily applied with the least development of new infrastructure, as this will be most likely to be implemented. Thus, we recommend utilizing schools or existing medical offices or clinics, and to identify children at a time of highest risk, we suggest targeted screening of all school-age children, not just athletes, in the age group over 10 years. So the logistics of this is to add the electrocardiographic evaluation, which only adds about 5 to 10 minutes to the school pre-participation or the physician office pre-participation or the well-child exam. And the most important thing is there be an active communication between the school and the medical personnel. So the nurses and physicians and other personnel need to communicate before, during, after with the school individuals as well. The cost is about $50 an individual, we think, and a little bit less, I believe, actually, than the European cost. And the funding for those who can't afford it, we've been able to get community organizations, medical groups, and hospitals to do this. And, of course, we all, as public health workers, hope that at some point preventive health will be covered by insurance as well. So the best practice model is one that results in survival. We think that screening is one method, but we will not find all of these children. So I have, if we can manage this, because we don't have speakers here, and I'm not real coordinated, but we'll see if this works. This
is back at 809 with what could have been a tragic situation that actually turned into a happy ending for a middle school student. ABC's Lilia Luciano has details on this. Lilia, good morning.
Good morning to you, Matt. What happened to 12-year-old Kylie Shea isn't something most parents would think was even possible. Walking the halls of her school, she suddenly collapsed. And without the quick thinking of two teachers and a life-saving device, she might not be here today. Until September 26, Kylie Shea seemed to be a perfectly healthy seventh grader. But as she walked the halls of Boss Middle School in a Dallas suburb, she suddenly felt short of breath.
I sat down and I fell over.
Kylie collapsed to the ground and passed out, as seen on this surveillance footage. Her friends, classmates, alerted gym teacher Kristen Gudgeon, who rushed to find Kylie wasn't breathing and was turning blue. The 12-year-old's heart had stopped.
Right away, I knew I had to get help.
Fellow gym teacher Brent Reese arrived and immediately started CPR. Gudgeon rushed to grab an automatic external defibrillator, a device used in dire medical emergencies to jumpstart the heart. In the video, both teachers are seen desperately trying to save young Kylie.
Just imagine the panic and you see the situation, it's an emergency.
With the help of the defibrillator, the teacher stabilized Kylie until a first responder team arrived. She was then airlifted to Children's Medical Center.
If it wasn't for this machine and for what they did, our daughter still may be with her today, but she wouldn't be the Kylie we know.
Doctors determined Kylie had an undetected heart condition and implanted her with a pacemaker. They say her survival is nothing short of a miracle.
Survival from somebody who collapses outside the hospital for a child is around 3%. Not very many.
But in Kylie's case, two heroic teachers and a machine required at Texas Public Schools made all the difference.
Well, they had in hand a miracle, and it's just thank you.
I just want to say something to Paul, thank you.
Doctors say arrhythmias made Kylie's heart stop, but they're still uncertain what caused them. Her parents say if the teachers had taken another 30 seconds to come to her rescue, their daughter would not have made it.
So that's the second method that we can prevent sudden cardiac death in schools. Thank you.